Hello, and welcome to the Astro City Spotlight on the Comic Book Cage podcast. My name is John Mann. In this episode, we'll be discussing Kurt Busiek's Astro City series. In this Astro City Spotlight, I am joined by James, and we're going to be discussing Kurt Busiek's Astro City number 5 and 6 from the 1995 run, and 1 and 2 from the 1996 run. James, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, John?
I am doing well. Now, I gotta say, I gotta be careful when doing the reading for these things. It's easy for me to get lost in a rabbit hole of just all the little Easter eggs and minutia and stuff like that. I took just a ton of notes on the first issue, actually quite a few on, a little less for the subsequent ones, but not a whole lot less. And then did a little research just to fill in one or two of the blanks on the first one of why a particular name was chosen and some stuff like that. And I am not by any means suggesting I am catching everything, because there's just so much in these things that are fun little Easter eggs. If you get it, you get it. And if you don't, it's not a big deal.
Yeah, I would agree. I notice when I read them, I keep open that Herocopia thing that I had told you about. Where they kind of tell you, like, the power set, who these characters are, because every now and then, if the character's not key to the story, he just kind of mentions it. But I can go on there and be like, oh, yeah, that's that guy. You know, so I kind of keep track of who's who.
Well, and it's funny because even though the characters that are front and center, I'm not sure I could accurately tell you what some of their powers are.
Yeah, I would agree. Sometimes they're just there, but you don't really see them do something. But I always like to reference it just so I have a, you know, repetition. You do it over and over and over again, and you start to know the characters, you know?
Yeah. Well, and some of them are much more obvious homages to particular characters, and some of them not so much.
I would agree. There's a few of them I was trying to guess. I'm like, I could see this is an homage character, and maybe I don't know who the character is. Or maybe some of them are just completely unique, but I think a lot of them were just a nod to Marvel, DC, Bronze, Silver Age that he really liked.
Definitely they're nods. I think some of them are a bit more on the nose than others, and a few of them are little bits and pieces of characters, but not necessarily a particular character it's, you know, riffing on.
Yeah, exactly. Like Samaritan, Winged Victory, those are like dead on, you know exactly who they are, where a few of them, yeah, they're a little more obscure.
Yeah. But even there, I don't feel like Samaritan is a carbon copy of Superman the way Hyperion of the Squadron Supreme over at Marvel, or Gladiator of the Shi'ar Imperial Guard, or Supreme over at Image, or, and I could probably go down and list another half dozen if I really wanted to.
Yeah, he's not copied as much as a lot of those characters are, those knockoffs.
The character hits the right notes to be a Superman analog without just being a repaint of the character. And again, same with Winged Victory, and we'll get to that when we cover issue 6 on both of those two. But like, here in number 5, Cracker Jack.
Yeah.
Acrobatic hero, sure. I'm not sure exactly which character I would say was kind of the model or the inspiration for this. I almost want to go with a cross between Spider-Man and Black Cat.
I could see that. I was thinking, the first time we saw him, I saw him holding onto that little, I guess like a little, it looked like Daredevil's wand, you know, with the string
coming off
of
it. The Billy Club, yeah.
Billy Club, yeah. I'm trying to remember what that thing was called. So I was thinking, maybe it's Daredevil, but the personality is so out there that it's very different. So he changed the personality completely, but he has an acrobatic style, but you could say Spider-Man, you could say Black Cat, Daredevil. I mean, there's a lot of characters he could be.
I definitely see a lot of Daredevil, and I think the thing that looks like his Billy Club is a lot of it. Costume-wise,
yeah.
It's got a little bit of a almost Captain America nomad kind of vibe to it.
Yeah, that old Nightwing collar from the original Nightwing uniform, maybe. But mm-hmm.
Well, there's aspects of it that I think, now granted, the V-neck, definitely more of a Nightwing thing than a nomad thing. But if you take Nomad, ditch the cape, and then say, no, he's not going to go with that color scheme. He's still Captain America. So give him some stars, some red, white, and blue kind of a thing. And, you know, it kind of translates into this.
Yeah.
But he's got the wisecracking aspect, more of a Spider-Man.
Yep.
And while I don't think it's clearly stated here, I kind of suspect this guy has luck powers like Black Cat.
Yeah, I could see that. Now that you say it, it does tend to go in his favor, the fights and the luck, as you would say.
I base it all on one irrefutable fact. He's still alive.
Very true.
Even if he wasn't getting killed six ways to Sunday by the villains he fights, I think just some of the other heroes want to kill him based on how he acts towards them.
Yeah, he is definitely not a liked character. That personality, it's kind of grating. You could almost say it's almost like a Deadpool-like or, you know, whatever. It's just so arrogant in your face.
I almost would go with an early Booster Gold.
Yeah, I've actually read some Booster Gold, and I could see that. Yeah, definitely.
I mean, how at one point he's, you know, taking credit for something and really dismissing the other heroes and stuff, and they knew that was coming, too.
Yeah, it was kind of funny. He's definitely known for having the limelight shined on him and taking credit for everything.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Interesting character, you know, someone that you could actually like if you like those types of personalities. You know, the person who's kind of out there and taking credit and the hot shot. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, what was interesting is, well, he was, I think, the lead hero of this issue. He was not the lead character of this issue.
Yes, he was not. We definitely get a different character, which was Birdwell.
Bridwell.
Bridwell. I'm sorry, I was calling him Birdwell. I'm kind of dyslexic a little bit there.
Easy to do. I typed it that way a half a dozen times in my notes. And this guy, old guy, living at a boarding house or whatever, and the twist here, because we're following him for a little bit, he's taking notes on the heroes and all this stuff, and it's like, why? What's going on? He's an alien, like an insect-looking alien.
Yeah, like a cockroach.
Yeah. Well, actually, the cockroach is one of the Astro City Irregulars.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. He looks kind of like, like a cockroach, too. Well, I don't know what it would be.
I was going to say,
like a praying mantis?
Praying mantis is where I was going to go.
Yeah, you're right. Now that I look at it, I was like, yeah, it's more praying mantis for sure.
But going that he's green and shapeshifts, he kind of reminds me a little of the Martian Manhunter at a very broad level.
Yeah, I can see with that. Yeah, definitely with the green coloring and everything. And I'll tell you what, I thought it was kind of ingenious for them to put in here him putting notes on the characters. And that's the, you know, profound way and a unique way of giving you the character stat sheets. And, you know, having blanks where he doesn't know the information, but usually that's stuck at the end of a comic. And here it's part of the story, so it makes sense.
Now, when we got that 2-page splash where we're getting kind of him updating his files while he's out at the park or whatever, I do have a problem with that page or those pages.
Okay.
The coloring of the text for the updates.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It green on green.
Light blue or something on green. Whatever it is, it's...
I don't know what it is. Yeah.
Unreadable on background. How about that?
Yeah. As you can tell, one of us is colorblind because I don't know if it's green or blue. Yeah, we'll go with... But it's definitely hard to read. I had to squint at it. I'm the same with you there, but... But as far as the character stat sheet goes, don't you think this was a clever way to do it?
Oh, very, because I think they also toss in one thing here that's probably lost on a lot of people until we get that character later.
Oh, okay.
Particularly with the Confessor and no known photographs.
Yeah, I like that. Very cool.
You know, there's just a lot of fun stuff here. It's a good way to have kind of in-story info dump. And then also, when we get the reveal of him being this alien and such... His room is, like, covered with newspapers and stuff.
Yeah.
And I didn't really take the time, because this is one of the rabbit holes I could easily fall into, of, gosh, I wonder what all those say. Because there's a couple of legible headlines here and there on it.
Yes, like, looking at them just now, you can see, like, life, you know, the first family, blah, 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 you know, Enforcer saves the Senate. You could definitely go down a rabbit hole trying to read all those pages.
Yeah, now some of these are clearly, you know, they just literally have a line where text would be, because... We don't need to read it all, but there is some stuff in there, so it's just kind of cool.
Yeah, very cool. Attention to detail on the artist part.
Well, that and with the story already, we're just a couple of pages in. We've already gotten the Astro City Irregulars. We've gotten Cracker Jack. We've gotten mention of Samaritan, Quarrel, Star Woman, a few others, the Confessor. And it keeps going there, and it's not like, oh my god, it's overwhelming. It's just, this is a realized world, and there are these details to be had.
Exactly. The details are there. It's not I don't want to say it's not relevant to the story, but it's not necessary for the story. Yet they're there. And as you start to learn more about this universe, you're going to realize that it was fully realized and built from the beginning.
That's the part that just floors me.
Yeah. He must have, or they must have, the creative team just come up with 60, 70, 80 characters and map this all out before they put pen to paper, which is just crazy. Crazy good.
Kurt Busiek had to be working on this for years and having, okay, here are the kinds of characters I want to do, here's the story for them, before starting any of this.
Yeah, because for him to be dropping these hints in here, you can tell the planning was done. Everything's there for you to go back and reread and reread and reread and realize, wow, he's doing a lot here.
Now, keep in mind, this was published in 1995. And at this point, I'm trying to think, who was the publisher on this? Was it when it was still over at Image? It's bounced around so much I've lost track.
Yes, it was Image.
Yeah. So we'd gotten where we had the big splash of Image. We're a couple of years past it. I'm trying to remember exactly when kind of the valley of the 90s was, but there was no reason to think this was going to go on 20, 30 years from now.
No, this was 6 issues, and then literally it went to DC after that. But yeah, most people, even before it went to DC, if you saw this 6-issue mini, you probably didn't think it was going to amount to much. And I'm not saying that because of the quality, just because books were tending to go at that period of time. You going to go away?
And that reminds me exactly kind of where this was. It was at Image, specifically over under the Homage line over at Wildstorm.
Yeah.
Wildstorm, over the years around 95, 96, got sold to DC. And so it's not like Astro City moved.
Oh, the publisher sold.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's exactly what happened.
Pretty much.
You know, and it worked out, I think, better here than it did for like the ABC line. Because that was Alan Moore, who never wanted anything to do with DC ever again after Watchmen. And Wildstorm acted as kind of a firewall or a buffer and stuff for quite some time.
Yeah. So this actually worked out very well. And I would say it's amazing the attention to detail in here, the amount of time that they put into each and every one of the pages. And like you've been telling us, or telling everyone, the listeners, the Easter eggs that he put in here for a world that most people, when they pick this up and they're only on the 5th issue, they don't realize what these names mean at this point in time, or really who, if they're going to amount to anything.
Yeah, because for all we knew, this was going to be the only time we'd ever see Cracker Jack or some of these others.
Yeah, this is a first appearance. I mean, I can't remember if we saw him before. I don't think so, but this was his first appearance, and maybe we'd see him again, maybe not.
Mm-hmm.
But kind of cool thing.
Did you catch the reference on Bridwell's name?
No, what was it?
Well, there was a writer-editor at DC, E. Nelson Bridwell.
Oh, okay.
Who was kind of one of the first comic fans hired into the industry, you know, way back when. He was a self-appointed continuity cop, so he was kind of tracking things on the heroes and stuff like that, much like this character is doing.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Some of his claims to fame are things like having created the Inferior Five over in Showcase and 1966. He helped DC produce Superman from the 30s to the 70s, Batman from the 30s to the 70s, and Shazam from the 40s to the 70s.
Wow.
He standardized the Kryptonian language as it was at the time, created the, I think, 118-character Kryptonese alphabet, which was used up until the John Byrne reboot, at which point it and most of the Superman continuity was chucked, which you could argue if that was a good thing or a bad thing, and I have my feelings.
Yeah.
He worked on some of the early limited series over at DC, World of Krypton, Secrets of the Legion of Superheroes, the Krypton Chronicles, and he was of the kind of sci-fi ilk and whatnot. And back in the day, was definitely a big name and stuff, and they didn't pick the name here by accident.
Definitely not. And he even, like you said, the continuity buff and the character stat sheets we have here, this is definitely an homage, a tip of the hat to that guy.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really kind of cool. Busiek must have really, and Anderson, they must have really appreciated him and what he did.
Oh, yeah. There's so many nods towards early creators, legendary editors, writers, inkers, letterists, colorists, etc. throughout this whole thing.
Very cool. Yeah, I like that.
I mean, so many of like the street names and things like that are are nods to the people who paved the way, if you will.
Yeah, that's really nice. It's almost like, I don't know, like a little piece of history with every issue that you get, which is really nice because even though we have history books, this is done in a way where it's fun to read. I don't want to say the history books we get from some publishers aren't fun, but this is a much more enjoyable way for me to read about it.
Well, it's one thing to get like the Comic Book Comics or whatever it was that Fred Van Lente does, which is a literal history of comics and stuff in comic form. Those are great.
Yeah.
But it's all of these Easter eggs, all of this knowledge that is just suffused into the book at such a deep level that separates it from, say, you know, we could have had some other hotshot writer come in and say, ah, I really understand superheroes in a way nobody else does, and could have told the same stories, but without the little nods to the characters, the creators, the history, the feel, the tone, the style, and such, it would have either fallen flat, been off-putting, or it may still have been great, but just in a very, very different way.
Yeah, I agree. This is definitely fantastic stuff, and I love the planning and the work that goes into every issue here. It's definitely something that you don't see in most modern comics.
Mm-hmm. Well, and some of the other characters we get ever so briefly are Nightingale and Sunbird.
Yep.
Very much a Batman and Robin-ish duo.
Yep.
What else? We get just a number of other characters throughout this as kind of bit things. And I loved how it ended, and I'm curious when the ramifications of this hit.
Yeah, I'm wondering too, because we will see it hit later on. One thing that I really kind of liked in this issue, you get the fire scene that happens.
Mm-hmm.
Was that this issue or the next issue where...
This issue had the fire.
This issue, okay, the fire. I get them kind of mixed up and, you know, they kind of melded together, but I don't want to say I like, but it was kind of interesting how they were talking about almost like this sissy kid who was an acting named Eugene, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And you're just like, oh, you know, why are they putting this in here? And then you realize later on, this Cracker Jack is kind of flipping through the air and singing, you know? You're like, oh, and he's like, oh, my collection, my record collection. He literally gives himself away in here to the general public, which was just hilarious that these people were talking about him in such a almost demeaning manner. And he's the hero, the most out there hero who's in your face.
Oh, yeah. Eugene was presented as a complete and utter loser, trying to get into musical theater, failing Six Ways to Sunday. Now, whether he was really trying or not, I think not. I think that was just his excuse to be away from the boarding house.
I would agree, yeah.
But then, at the very end, when they've uncovered out of the fire, the firemen have found the different identification documents he's got, the disguises, the wigs, all this stuff. And little old ladies, oh yeah, we totally knew the whole time.
Right.
Which totally sends Ridwell off the deep end of, you know, these dishonest humans and such.
Yeah, let me go update my files. I'm sending a message.
Because he'd been stalling an invasion, essentially, because there was something about Earth he was liking. Not quite sure what it was, but then this just, they're irredeemable.
Yeah, and definitely Noam Busiek and Anderson, this little scene at the end where he puts the message to go out to space, there's going to be a follow-up issue on this. It could be 5 issues from now, it could be 10, we don't know, but this will be a follow-up somewhere.
Yeah, somewhere, but this being 5 of 6, there was a part of me thinking we'd get it in the 6th.
Me too. I was like, oh, that's a two-parter, but it wasn't that way.
But again, what makes this series unique is, by and large, it's, I don't want to say done in one stories, but self-contained issues building the larger world.
Yes.
There are things that come back here and there. I mean, we got a quick cameo of Jack in the Box that we'd gotten a few issues earlier. We'd already gotten Samaritan set up in the first issue. We're going to see him next and stuff like that. So it's not like they're disconnected issues by any stretch, but we change the vantage point and who the lead character is from issue to issue. Yet there's definitely a building of history and continuity and all of that going on.
Yeah. I would say the only thing that I notice in the modern day, like a writer who does that, is McKay, who we talked about in the past.
Jed McKay.
Yeah, with his Black Cat and stuff, where he, if you read all the issues, you'll pick things up from what he wrote previously, but each one kind of stands on its own, which is really nice. And Busiek was doing this years before McKay. And you can't help but think, and I can't prove this, but that McKay's probably a fan of Busiek's Astro City. And he probably, appreciated reading this. Maybe, I'm guessing, I could be completely off base.
Certainly wouldn't surprise me.
It wouldn't surprise me if he tied that into his writing. He's like, I like reading like this. I should make mine accessible like this. Boom, here you go.
Well, if you've got something in every issue that gives payoff and it feels complete in and of itself, people are more likely to get that next issue.
Yeah, I would agree. I remember the first time I read Astro City way back. It might have been these first cut few issues, you know, right before I was, you know, getting out, dipping in, dipping out.
Mm-hmm.
But then I didn't read it again until probably right before I became your co-host. So that must be like 7 years back. I don't know how long I've been doing this.
A good couple of years, yeah.
Yeah. But it was you and Drew. You guys were reading Astro City. I listened to the podcast. I picked it up. And it was like issue, and I'm guessing right now, I could pull up my thing, but like say 37. And it was literally like this. You can pick it up and I could read it. And I felt like I didn't have to know all that other stuff. And I was able to enjoy the issue. And so I kept buying them, even though I started at 37. And that's so hard to do with current comics.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and that's part of why the Dark Ages run, which was four-issue miniseries,
yeah,
is kind of my least favorite in some regards, in so much as they are longer stories, and again, 12-issue chunk of it. That's a sizable percentage of the overall Astro City output.
A different formula than what he's doing here. And I've never read the Dark Ages, but I've been told by many people that was their least favorite, so I've kind of avoided it until we get to it.
I'm curious what my thoughts are going to be when we get back to it, when we get up to that point.
Yeah, it's coming. I don't know when it's coming, but it's coming.
It's a little ways down, but yeah. So many of these things are either done in one or at most like a two-parter, but even then, each part feels like it kind of stands on its own sufficiently.
Yeah, and more writers need to literally go to the Kurt Busiek, you know, class on learning how to write a comic that's accessible. And that this is perfectly accessible for most new readers.
I would love it if Kurt Busiek put together a prose book on kind of the behind the scenes of how he put Astro City together, why he put it together, how he collaborates with Brent Anderson, Alex Ross, you know, what makes this thing work, just one, at all, but two, over the decades.
Yeah, I would agree. I would love to just read up and see what he was thinking. And I think he would be a person who could actually teach a lot of his peers. I think he needs to be a mentor. I know he's a writer, but I would love to see him be a mentor to more current writers. I don't know how that would be established or set up, but I think he could just say, hey, start with character A, flesh them out. You can have these characters B, C, D, and E, F in the background, but don't overwhelm the person, make it character A. Now we'll move to character E. And by the way, you can have these other things popping up as teasers, but not confusing. And that's, I think, the brilliance of this book. I can read about Samaritan, or I can read about Winged Warrior, or Cracker Jack, or whoever. And I don't feel, even though I got like 8 characters, I didn't feel overwhelmed. I felt like it was a Cracker Jack book along with this alien. That's it.
Yeah. Well, even looking at something like JLA Avengers that Busiek did.
Yeah.
There's a ton of characters from 2 different universes thrown in there, yet the story flows well.
Yeah, it really does. Fantastic stuff. Now, I was going to ask you, I know we're going to be getting to the 6th issue.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have any kind of like, this was so weird. So many comics that I read today, when we do these back issue spotlights or reading other things like that happened with Action Comics, I felt like I just read about this and I think it was Nightwing. The date.
I'm an issue or two behind, I think, on Nightwing.
Oh, okay. Actually, I'm sorry. Was there a date? Okay, never mind. I'm sorry.
Well, there was the one in World's Finest.
World's Finest, that's what it was, that's not Nightwing. Was, yeah. World's Finest, I thought it was Nightwing. I was like, I knew I just read a date. It was World's Finest, where one was having their...
Well, it's interesting, because issue 6 here is Samaritan goes out on a date with Winged Victory.
Yeah.
The whole thing was set up by the Honor Guard. If you two need a night off, and you're going to spend it together. And so, I mean, both of these two are, and I think the issue does a great job of showing this, so similar in some regards and so radically different in other ways.
Yes.
And this is essentially kind of, sort of, but not exactly what it would be like if Superman and Wonder Woman dated, if it were written by, say, Greg Rucka.
Yeah, I could see that. I really could. This reads like a Rucka issue.
Because he tends to go into a bit more of the philosophical, political, however you want to phrase it and such. And it's not just, oh, there's these two heroes on a date. Gosh, how funny could this be or what have you?
No, he tends to delve into especially things like women's issues and how it's different for a woman being a hero than a man being a hero in the American society, which is a factual thing in the comics that we read, a factual thing for women that are in society out there, whatever they're doing, working, you know, executives, whatever. But yeah, she feels like she has to behave different and she has a lot more weight on her than Samaritan does in this comic.
It's funny because if anyone were to try to write Winged Victory other than Kurt Busiek, I think Greg Rucka would be a very good choice.
Oh, he would. He would do a terrific job. He loves to write strong female characters, strong female leads.
Mm-hmm.
And he would flesh her out and make her, I hate to say this, but more powerful than Samaritan. Because of the weight and the burden that she carries and have the feeling that I need to be this much more because of who I'm representing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and here we'd gotten a line or two about Winged Victory before in the one about the mystical part of Astro City.
Yeah.
I forget the name of Mount Kirby or whatever, that area.
Yeah.
And how she's got this cult and all this kind of stuff. But now we actually get to see Winged Victory in her civilian form and her powered form and how she changes and stuff like that. And again, very different than Wonder Woman, but it's got a nod to aspects there. And I love how she is very specific about who she saves, why she saves, the message she's sending and such. And I also really enjoyed getting the backstory on Samaritan. What's his background? What's his origin?
Yeah, we definitely get the origin. We get the why behind what she's doing. It's just really cool. And it reads so modern and fresh, even though this was written literally almost 30 years ago. It reads like something that you, like issues that we're dealing with today.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's uncanny how it doesn't feel dated while we're reading this. Yet at the same time, you get that Bronze Age feel when you're reading it.
Yeah,
it's bizarre. It's hard to explain without reading it on its own. But it's a terrific matchup, and it felt like comics that I'm reading today because of the dating aspect and just reading that happening in a current series. It's like, I always get these flashbacks now when we're doing back issue spotlights with current comics. It's hilarious.
Well, it's funny because when we see the flashback of Samaritan saving the space shuttle.
Yeah.
Again, very similar to the Byrne origin of Superman going public and stuff. I forget if he saved a jet, a space plane, or exactly what it was. But again, very analogous to.
Yeah. Now, I would say I thought it was very powerful when they get to the part where they're saying, where she, with Winged Victory, is talking to Samaritan saying, you're basically like a god trying to be a normal person.
Yes. I love that line because it really shows, because she's like, she's a normal woman trying to live up to the role of a god.
Yes.
And he's like a god pretending to be normal.
Yes. And that's so, that just juxtaposition is just so powerful when you read that. You're like, wow, kind of hits you in the gut. And it makes you realize who these characters are and why they're being the way they are. And it's very true. Clark, or not Clark, Samaritan.
Well, that's funny because I think Asa Martin here, he's got more characterization here than I felt he had in the first issue. And it's so Clark Kent-ish.
It's so Clark Kent-ish. It feels just like him. And that's exactly who Clark is and who Samaritan is that they are that god who's trying to look and behave in society like a normal person. Whereas Winged Victory's a normal person trying to live up to the responsibilities or the power that she has of being almost godlike in our world. Which is just so, it's flip-flopped. They're both very powerful characters, but where they're coming from essentially changes in who they are. They're a power couple. You would love to see them together, but will it ever happen? Who knows? They had a nice little moment.
Well, it's funny because this could have ended very differently than it did, where they basically butted heads on, you know, why are you only saving women? You should save everybody, or, you know, or her saying, why aren't you doing more? You know, they definitely had very different agendas and personalities and such. And he was definitely asking kind of the hard questions, not in a softball manner, but certainly not going for the jugular or anything. And she was definitely a little defensive and stuff because of how she's typically treated in this world.
Yes, but he didn't go there. He kept it where they almost came to an understanding about each other, finding out who each other are. And that so speaks to me in my headspace and where I am in the current world it feels like when I look at people, they're so busy being opinionated and yelling at the other with a different opinion.
Yeah.
That people don't talk today. They don't communicate. My dad and I, we don't agree on a lot of stuff, but I finally feel like we learned to start talking to each other recently in a way where we didn't butt heads. This happened, you know, probably 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so this really speaks to me as a person. I like it when people of differing opinions, whether it's politics left and right, whether it's opinions on whatever, if you can just communicate and understand where someone's coming from, it makes you a better person, I think. It opens your eyes.
Absolutely, absolutely. The problem is it's so rare.
It's so rare. People don't want to experience. They want to live in their box, and this is it, in black and white. That's it.
They're more worried about or focused on convincing you of what they think than listening to what you think and trying to understand it. And yes. So much of what Asa Martin was doing here was just trying to understand her position.
Yes.
And getting to know her better.
This was honestly a perfect issue. And I would say it speaks to mature James. You know, 30 years ago, I'd probably have been like, I like this one. I don't like this one. But honestly, I feel like I've matured recently. Like the comics I like now definitely have a much more mature tone. And I'm not talking about like adult, you know, X-rated stuff. I'm talking about characterization.
Substance and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Really getting to know and having moments like this. I'm like, I appreciate that kind of stuff. So this was a fantastic issue.
But Kurt Busiek was also balancing the, hey, we've got two people sitting at a meal talking about things with, okay, there's all this action going on that all the other heroes are having to cover for these two taking the night off.
Yeah. And basically, you got to call up the entire remainder of the Justice League to turn off your super hearing. Mm-hmm. We got you covered. And they're running all over trying to fix things. And then it literally at the end, they end it with a kiss and they're like, emergency, got to run. And they both run separate ways because there's stuff going on. They're needed.
Yeah.
Just fantastic. There's action, but there's also a mature conversation being had.
Well, but also her continually getting bumped into at the burger place and how she blows up on that. The bit with Beauty knocking out Golden Boy and both of them knowing about it, even though that's, you know, potentially across the country or something.
Yeah.
You know, and just little things like, oh, her medallion gives her images, but not hard facts, whereas his terminal to his zyometer, or however you'd pronounce that, gives him the cold facts, but not the images. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah.
And again, little things like that of how they're so similar and such polar opposites at the same time.
Yeah, which you would never guess. You would never think that two powerhouse superheroes at the top of the game, the top of the food chain, let's say, as far as power sets go, they'd be so opposingly different. Just opposite sides of the spectrum, almost.
And there's absolutely nothing about this issue, if you change the names and a few specifics, but the tone, the style, the gist of the issue, there's no reason this couldn't and shouldn't have been done already with Superman and Wonder Woman.
Yeah, this issue should have happened at DC, and I felt like it almost did happen at DC. It happened at Image, and then the publishing moved to DC, but yes, it should have happened with Superman and Wonder Woman, though.
I think the closest we got was an issue of Wonder Woman written by Greg Rucka, where Lois Lane was interviewing Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
And that was during when she was literally an ambassador for Themyscira and stuff.
Yeah. I feel like Wonder Woman's in a bad place when I got to preface that by saying, I feel like people don't know how to write her. You know, are you going to write her as this martyr and this peace activist, or are you going to make her a very powerful and strong a fighter? And nobody knows which direction to go. And it's weird.
All right. So I'm not entirely sure when this episode's going to get released, but as we record this, the DC Connect that's coming out, I think just dropped or whatever, the last day or so.
Yeah.
Has the cover for Wonder Woman number one.
Okay.
It's written by Tom King and I want to say Daniel St-Pierre or whatever on the art.
Oh, God.
I was looking at it. The art looks terrific.
Okay.
The Wonder Woman logo, very kind of Americana, you know, looked great.
Okay.
And I'm like, oh, Tom King, though. I don't know. But then there was the line on the cover of the DC Connect image I was saying of something along the lines, she was a warrior, now she's a, you know, wanted criminal or something like that.
Oh my God, I pulled it up. The Amazon warrior is now a wanted outlaw.
That's it. That's it. And I'm like, man, so close. So close.
Oh my God. Yeah.
You know, and it's like swing and a miss. Here, he's taking nothing and building up such a realized world where we get to know these characters, even if there's surprising details we don't know about them.
Yeah, really. Yeah, there's a lot of things we don't know about them. And I'll tell you what, I feel like we're only 5 issues into the entire Astro City run, and we're 2 weeks apart in reading these, you know, the issues. I don't know when these episodes are going to go up, but I feel like I really know these characters as well as Superman and Wonder Woman at this point.
We certainly understand them.
I understand them. I understand their philosophies, their mentality, and I feel like I'm growing to like them at this point. And that's a lot because the other two have been around for 80 years.
Now, there was one thing, and maybe I just missed it in this issue with Winged Victory.
Okay, what is that?
What's her civilian name?
Oh, I didn't write it down, so I don't know. Did they not say?
I don't think they said.
Oh, huh. Interesting.
If they did, I completely missed it.
Yeah, I must have too, because I don't know. I could go to Herocopia and tell you.
Yeah, but, I mean, we'll get to it whenever we get to it and the issues and such. So I just thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, they have to tell us later on at some point.
Do they?
I don't know. I went to Herocopia. I know what her name is now. Do you want me to spoil it for you? I'll
worry about it later. I mean, the point of it is she rarely spends time out of that persona of Winged Victory, that who she is almost doesn't matter.
It really doesn't. She is Winged Victory. That's who she is. I think it's more so than just being a hero. It's the essence of who she is. Even in her personal life, she's thinking like and behaving like Winged Victory.
Well, and at one point, he calls her out on that of, aren't you basically, you know, hiding from reality and stuff, and kind of, you haven't met with your parents and stuff like that in years. You're almost as cut off as he is, kind of a deal, he says. And he comes from, you know, again, it's like Superman, Krypton is no more. His backstory is very different, but again, they found a fun parallel to that.
Yeah.
So, interesting stuff here.
Very interesting and very realized, fleshed out.
Yeah, that's one of the things I just love about this series is you can just dig into a single issue and get a feel for how realized the world is if you want to dive that deep into it.
Yeah, and this was right at the tail end before, I guess, Wildstorm went over to DC.
Yeah, thereabouts, yeah.
Because the next issue, the issue number one, it starts at DC.
Yeah, issue 6, I think, was January 1995, and number 1 of the next series was, I think, September 96. So I think there was a little bit of a gap there, maybe a year and a half. But yeah, and they changed logos for the thing, for the comic here.
Do you like the original logo or this logo, the new DC one?
Man, that's a tough call. Both are great.
They are. They're both really good. I didn't know if you had a preference, so I'm trying to look. You know, man, the other one, the original one almost looks like Silver Age. The other one, I don't know, it looks like Art Deco almost. Man, they're both, I don't know.
I think the original one that has the little ring with the planetoid on it going around Astro City, that's kind of fun. It looks like a 60s futuristic sign.
Yeah, it really does.
Whereas this looks a little more print designy kind of a thing, and not in a bad way at all.
Yeah, no, I know what you're saying there. They're very different logos, and I can't pick a favorite.
Yeah, both are solid. I have not thought to look to see how many different logos this thing goes through over the years.
Yeah, I don't know either. So I guess we're going to find out as we go between the different volumes.
Well, we're on 2. We just need to keep track.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the hard part. Now, we get to number 1 of the second series, and it starts with a man on the street interview of a TV reporter, and she's a bit tenacious. She's just going after anybody shoving mics in front of them. And she shoves it in front of Ben Pullman and his 2 daughters. They just got in last night. It is literally their first day in Astro City. Movers just finished unpacking, and kind of a, why do you live in Astro City?
Yeah, I'm like, that's kind of in your face. I just moved here.
He doesn't even have a chance to answer. Samaritan crashes down with 2 armored guys from the Iron Legion. They're fighting literally in front of his new place. And he's like, why did I move here?
Yeah, why did I bring my 2 small children? Are we going to get killed right now? That's how he's feeling, I'm imagining.
Oh, yeah. And she then, the reporter takes off of, hey, we've got a scoop that'll make the news, you know, at noon. Let's go take that. We can come back and do man on the street stuff anytime.
Yeah. Now, I did notice the little newscast thing, the van that mm-hmm. they had. It has the little atomic symbol, just like with the new Astro City logo.
Yeah. Well, if you look at the Astro City Waste Management hat on the first page,
yeah.
it's got it there. So it's definitely a symbol of the city. And I think we've seen it on the top of one of the towers. As a matter of fact, when they go sightseeing in this issue, which again, fun way to introduce a bunch of stuff, it's the Astrobank Tower that's got that as the emergency beacon on top.
Yeah, it's so cool how the world is so realized between the artist and the writer in here that you can't really chalk it up to one or the other, because I'm sure they worked in tandem. Oh,
they worked
on this.
Well together, yeah.
Yeah. There's just Easter eggs everywhere. Everywhere. It's so cool. I mean, and then you start going to, like, when they're getting the tour of the city, hey, this is Air Ace. He's the very first superhero.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, blah, blah, blah. And he literally looks like he's made from bronze, but, you know, you could say Golden Age character. Just that pistol and old-timey look.
Oh, he definitely has Mystery Man written all over him.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It was kind of funny. Then you see Snaggletooth right across there with Looney Leos, mm-hmm. which is hilarious. But then when they got to the next page, when you see Alan Craig, the Silver Agent, it's almost like an homage to the Silver Age, you know, 1932 to 1973, which probably 73 was right around the start of the Bronze Age, when the Silver Age was kind of going away and the Bronze Age was coming in.
Thereabouts. I don't think there's a hard and fast, it was right here kind of a deal.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's certainly in that era. And then the to our eternal shame line under that on the plaque.
Yeah. Yeah, that was kind of, I was like, our eternal shame, what the heck?
Well, and one of his kids asks, gee,
yeah.
how come? And he's like, oh, I'll explain when you're older. But it's such a great way, a father taking his kids, young kids, around town, they've just moved in, see the sights, plant some seeds, ooh, there's a backstory with the Silver Agent. I wonder what that is.
Yeah.
And it's very literally and directly asking the question, and we do get the answer later. It takes a while, but you're not here for instant gratification.
No. This is the kind of stuff where you don't need to know this for the story. It's a teaser for something coming up in the future, the Silver Agent, because we're going to visit him again. I know mm-hmm. we will. But at this moment, I was like, no, tell me, Dad. Tell me what in the heck happened. Why is it to our eternal shame? But we have to be patient and wait.
Because I want to think that happened in the 100th issue of Astro City.
Yeah, exactly. It was like, it didn't happen for a long time.
Yeah, because there was quite a few years where we didn't get Astro City. Which is a shame.
Yeah, unfortunate. But I'm happy for what we have, and will it be revisited again? I hope so.
Yeah. Well, and this is another issue where we get a ton of cameos of different people. We get Jack in the Box, Crackerjack and Quarrel, Hanged Man, Nightingale and Sunbird. We get the Honor Guard. We get Winged Victory. We get the Gentleman.
Yeah, the First Family's kind of in the background floating around.
Yeah. First Family's there too. The Astro City regulars, I think, are in there somewhere.
Yep. And we literally get, like, when you saw that picture of the big storm cloud, you get a deity attacking the city.
Yes. Well, there apparently is some debate as to whether he's a deity or a paranormal or such, according to one of the news reports later in the issue. But
yeah,
he's big enough. He's angry enough. I wouldn't argue deity, certainly not to his face.
Oh, he looks like Zeus with all that lightning and stuff.
Yeah, definitely a storm deity of some sort.
Yeah, so that was kind of cool. And basically, everyone was called in, all the teams that, and you just kind of see them in the background. You don't need to know who they all are, but it's kind of cool. You start seeing a lot of them show up, and you remember some of them. You're like, oh, there's Wing of Victory. Oh, there's this person. Oh, there's this person.
Now, when we get Hanged Man and the helicopter almost, you know, takes itself out, and they get rescued by the Gentleman, what did you think of that guy?
The Gentleman?
Yeah.
At this moment, I thought he was kind of cheesy. He looked like James Bond.
Actually, Fred McMurray.
Fred McMurray, yeah, that's it.
My Three Sons.
That's true. Oh my God, now that you say it, I'm like, oh my gosh, that is him. Holy mackerel.
I think that's their Shazam.
Oh, okay. When I saw him, I was like, who is this guy? I was looking at him almost like, who's this James Bond type? Because he's wearing the black suit and everything like mm-hmm. that. But now that you say it, I'm like, oh my gosh, that is hilarious.
But it's one of those things, just the way he was talking, he's only in there for maybe a page or whatever.
Yeah.
But they set him up. It's kind of cool.
It's really cool. Yeah. We just see him. You don't know much about him. You don't know his power set other than he's up in the air. So either he can jump really high or he can fly.
He can definitely fly. I don't think you can catch a helicopter otherwise.
Exactly.
Even if I could fly, I don't know that I'd want to be that close to a helicopter because, you know, whatever, still. But yeah, ton of fun.
But you also get like a lot of kind of bad guys breaking into a bank and stuff because, well, all the heroes are distracted. People start running amok, of course, anytime there's... But then that's where you see the street-level characters kind of pop up.
Yeah, that's where we get Nightingale and Sunbird.
Yeah.
I don't recall them ever getting kind of a feature spot in one of the issues.
They didn't. Not in the ones we read. I know we'll probably see more of them in the future. It's weird because you know you'll see them. But yeah, they haven't really been featured other than a pop-up appearance in one other issue.
I mean, I know there are some others that we definitely see front and center and stuff like that. I just, again, it's been ages since I've read all the different issues of this. I'm wondering if these are ones that potentially fall by the wayside.
It could be, and I didn't read a lot of Astro City, so if you don't remember them, maybe they weren't popular, or maybe he didn't have a passion to write them. Who knows?
Well, it's also not the only Batman and Robin-ish type characters he's got.
That's true. He has a whole plethora.
And just to say he hadn't gotten back to him doesn't mean he won't. Because, again, in some of the more recent stuff that he teased with the one-shot or whatever, they were doing like a Teen Titans riff, and Sunbird seems like definitely could be part of that, and maybe she was, I just don't remember.
Yeah, the Astro City world is still alive.
Yeah.
And still developing.
Just slowly, ever so slowly.
Yes, very slow.
So, but I thought this was a lot of fun. We get a man-on-the-street perspective on the story as to what is it like to live when a god attacks your city.
Yeah, that was kind of funny. And I like how the Thunder God, or Thunderhead, that's what his name
Thunderhead,
was.
Thunderhead, yeah.
Was kind of put in check, but not in a way that you'd expect. It wasn't our heroes who put him in check. It was Hela, his wife, who comes in.
Well, Samaritan had something to do with that.
Yeah, Samaritan did. She comes in there and she is basically putting the smack down on him.
Yeah. I thought that was a ton of fun. And it's like, okay, you did exactly what you shouldn't have done. Let's go home, honey. You know, sort of a deal.
I also like that Kurt Busiek he didn't go in depth, but he talked about some serious issues in the comic without really going in depth, you know, talking about, oh, Uncle so-and-so.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
When I first wrote the stuff down, I'm like, it's Ben, his wife, and his two daughters. And then I realized, wait, his wife's not there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And then there's like, why isn't mommy coming with us kind of a deal? And then it's but what about Uncle So-and-so? And he's like, I got to find something nice to say about Uncle So-and-so. And right there, it paints the picture.
Yeah.
He's divorced. His wife cheated on him with this guy and does it without harping on it kind of a thing.
And it was such a gut punch. And he never told you what happened, but you know what happened exactly how you had just hashed it out by all the other stuff.
Yeah.
And honestly, he's a better person than a lot of adults are today, because some adults today, a lot of adults today, just trash the other parent when they're upset with them because of their own emotional feelings over the situation, what happened, not realizing they're damaging the kids in the process.
Well, and making sure the kids are okay is front and center in his mind the whole time. That's very clear.
I was like, this is a good parent. He made him not a horrible person, a self-centered person. Mm-hmm. He made him an actual parent, someone who cared about his kids. And I was like, I took my hat off and I was like, thank you, Kurt Busiek. And that guy is a good man. Cool. Good dad.
Well, and I loved the kind of two-page epilogue sort of a thing. You know, the danger's passed. It's the next morning. The Department of Public Works is already out there to go fix stuff. The neighbors are helping each other clean up and set back up. And of course, our roving reporter for the Man on the Street interview picks up where she left off. Why did you move here?
And he's like looking around. He's like, he sees how the whole community pulls together. And he's like, I think we'll stay.
Well, because she's like, you had quite a night. What do you think of Astro City now after, you know, God nearly attacked or whatever? Yeah. Ton of fun.
Yeah. The sense of community, even in this big city, is something you don't see in big cities, I think, today.
Oh, absolutely.
This really, it makes you love Astro City for being like almost that idyllic place.
Well, it's funny because, you know, at the beginning, he was saying his answer was going to be, well, it's not Boston.
Yeah.
You know? And this is where the voice over captions really work.
Yeah.
Because you get those different layers. You can get into his mind in a way that thought bubbles, I don't think, would have worked.
I agree. Yeah, I agree. Once again, another fantastic issue.
Yeah. And again, a character, I don't know that we ever see him again, but he served his purpose. He told us about the city. We learned about it. And again, ton of fun.
Yeah, I agree. And then the last issue that we had was another good issue that I really kind of like, because this was the first family, which is kind of like the Fantastic Four.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's also our first two-parter, and we've only got the first part here. We'll talk about the second part in our next Astro City Spotlight. And we're focusing on Astra, the youngest member of the first family.
Yeah. And I thought Astra was very unique here because she reminded me of Valeria.
Yeah.
Mixed with the Human Torch.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's flaming and flying around. I'm like, they literally took the Human Torch and Valeria and mixed her because she's a super smart little girl, you know, prodigy. And then she's flaming and flying around. I was like, it's so cool. I latched onto her.
The first family is essentially Reed and Ben as science adventurers back in the day. And the Reed equivalent, not so good with the love life. I think they said he married and divorced four times.
Mm-hmm.
We only find out about the third wife, who essentially seemed to go run off with the equivalent of, say, Namor.
Yes.
Although it's a near legendary tribe of animal men, so a little of maybe Black Panther tossed in there.
Exactly.
But her kids wind up having these energy things, because he met her when she was trapped in this alien energy field in Yugoslavia.
Yes.
Fell in love, rescued her, married, it didn't work, she runs off, her kids have problems. Only he can help. So he winds up adopting and raising him. They have these energy powers, so they're essentially both kind of replacements for Johnny and Sue Storm, and both power-wise, essentially the Human Torch, kind of, sort of, but not quite.
Yeah.
The daughter marries the son of one of their big villains, and he's definitely an alien of some sort, and they have Astra. So that's how they get the new member and such. And she's, I don't know, how old do you think she is here? 8, 10?
Yeah, somewhere around there. I would say 10, That works. And Astra, your heart goes out to her. First of all, the mom kind of dumped her. I don't know how to deal with this, you know? You take, like, so the Reed Richards is raising her, even though he's not really the father, which is just so...
Well, the Reed Richards is the grandfather of her.
The grandfather, yeah.
So her mother and father are still around, but full-time members of the team.
Exactly. So, I mean, he loves her, but it's kind of weird that they kind of dumped her off on, but she's being raised, but she's so different because she's very intelligent, but she's almost encapsulated and shielded from society and being a normal kid.
Oh, totally.
Yeah, she's looking out the window, she's watching kids play hopscotch, and she's literally asking her artificial intelligence, who's her friend, quote-unquote friend, you know, what is this design? And she draws the hopscotch, and he's like going off on, oh, that could be like this type of church or this type of symbol. Well, the kids are playing it. I don't have that in my programming.
Yeah, I don't know about games.
I'm like, what a sad existence for a little girl.
She's got a holographic alarm clock, an alien fish as a pet.
That looked horrifying, didn't it? The fish?
Yeah, kind of, sort of, but it works for her. She's got an AI tutor and such, and she's definitely living in a bubble. So when she's on this TV show and getting asked, oh, what's your favorite TV show, or what music do you like to listen to, and all this stuff, she is definitely squirming and not doing well.
Yeah, she doesn't know how to relate, and they realize they're losing her. And by they realize, not the show host.
The producer, like, of the show is like, oh, let's switch tacks.
Yeah, let's go on a different thing. And when they start talking to her about subjects that she actually knows something about, she opens up and she blossoms on TV.
Yeah, have you met the irregulars? What about this guy? How's your uncle? That kind of stuff.
Yeah, and it makes you feel like, I really like this girl, but it makes you feel a little bit sad for her at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Because she doesn't have real friends. She doesn't have a real knowledge of just how to let go and have a good time.
One other thing I want to touch on is her costume.
Yeah. Okay, her costume.
It is a full body suit. It's black with orange gloves, boots, and a big orange F on the torso.
Yeah, it's kind of weird, but...
First family.
Yep.
Fantastic Four.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's a very different take on a Fantastic Four costume, but it feels just as much like what they could have done, other than the four in a circle kind of a deal.
Yeah, if the colors would have been blue and white, you could have picked this as maybe a new design for a Fantastic Four costume.
Yeah, yeah.
It wouldn't be out of place. And she could be Valeria, you know, some artist drawing Valeria. If you told me this was her, I'd believe you. I'd be like, yeah, oh yeah, that's her.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I love how they play with the tropes of the Fantastic Four franchise, but reinterpret them in new ways. Because again, her Mr. Smarty thing, it's a different take on like a Herbie the Robot kind of babysitter, what have you.
Oh, yeah. Or they have that little academy with the purple dragon with the wings, you know? I can't remember his name.
The Future Foundation.
Yeah, the Future Foundation. Yeah. Could be him, you know? It could be a number of them. But, I mean, there's so many subtle differences where it's, I feel like it's a passion, a love letter to the Fantastic Four, not plagiarizing. He's like, I love these characters. I can play with them in my own world, and let me just tweak them a little bit, and here they are. And you know who they are, but they're very different at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I love this. I thought this was terrific. And when I got to that last page, I was like, oh, I want to jump ahead and read the next issue, but I didn't. But I wanted to.
No, I totally get it. I loved how she's been introduced to a couple of things. She's realized she's not had a normal childhood. She's not getting the answers from her parents and stuff, because they're all busy with, you know, heroing stuff. They're on adventures. It's important. So she decides to go have an adventure of her own, essentially to go learn how to play hopscotch.
Yeah. She flies away and leaves a message. I've gone on an adventure. Please feed uranium. That's it. I'm out of here.
Yeah.
Brave girl.
Now, I got a question about their headquarters.
Okay. You mean that big house?
The big house. When we see it at the beginning, the angle we've got on it, it definitely looks kind of futuristic. It looks like it's got, I don't know, an observatory or something on it.
Yeah.
But when you go to that last page and we see it in silhouette, it
looks kind of different.
There's something about it, particularly with the part in front of it that's the more organic shape to it and such. The observatory part with, I guess, the telescope sticking out, it almost looks like a face in profile with like the Superman hair or something.
It really does.
And then the part that's kind of going off to the right there, like the cape billowing in the breeze, with the building in front kind of offsetting it with a color and stuff like that, making it look like a chest emblem or something like that. Like it's a superhero in profile.
Yeah, it looks like it's Superman standing on a hill with the sun set behind him. It's pretty clever.
I assume that's intentional?
I don't think that's by mistake. I think that's definitely intentional. I'm guessing.
It's really well done and subtle.
Yeah, I love it. It's beautiful. That last page is beautiful, the coloring on it.
Yeah, the whole thing is great.
Yeah.
And I know we see Astra not only next issue, but down the line.
Yeah. She's a terrific character. I already like her. We got to know her a little bit. But you come out of this and you're like, I like her. I want to learn more about the family. And she's off on an adventure. And you know that they're all going to come together to save her because she's on some kind of adventure or go out and look for her. And they'll be fleshed out probably in issue 2 of this series, which will be issue 3.
Well, and the other thing is Kurt Busiek kind of sort of told this real time-ish.
Yes.
Not like Savage Dragon, where you get snippets of things, next issue's a month later, you get snippets of things kind of going forward or whatever. But here, she is this age in 1996. If we get a present-day story today, she will have aged.
She'll be maybe a woman who's married or something.
Getting to where she could have a kid this age before too
long,
kind of a thing.
Yeah, maybe she's a mom and she has her own Valeria type on her hands.
Yet, with the format of the comic and the series, he could always do a flashback to another story of this era.
Yeah, just fantastic issue. I like everything about this, and I like that he's doing that. He ages the character up because he's doing the series still 30 years from now, and I'm happy that things kind of change as we go.
I just would like to see him get to a point where he can focus a bit more on it, and we get a more regular output.
Yeah, I would agree. To me, I think it's, and I don't know, it's popular enough of a series that if he continued to do it on a monthly basis, he'd always have an audience there, I feel. I don't know if the sales justified it, but I feel like there's an audience that craves for this Bronze Age type storytelling done in a modern fashion with characters that we kind of know, but you don't, little changes on them. This is stuff that people can pick up at issue. If he wanted to do issue 102 when he starts up, everyone could jump on and you wouldn't be lost.
Yeah.
You'd know where you are and he'd give you enough information. And the longtime readers, he'd put little Easter eggs for you. So I hope he gets paid enough, you know, out of his labors and him and Brett can come together and revisit this property because it's fantastic.
Yeah. As far as I know, I mean, it wasn't always selling gangbusters, but I don't know that that was ever a problem for them. I think it's more a matter of the time and effort and thought he puts into this being a bit more than is required for a typical issue of a regular comic or something.
Yeah.
Because again, he's got layers on layers here and connective threads to all the different issues and stuff like that in a way that just simply isn't done in most Marvel and DC comics these days.
Yeah. While at the same time keeping it very simple to anybody who wants to read it.
Accessible.
Yeah, and that's the magic of what he does, because current writers don't know how to do that.
Yeah. Well, and one of the things that threw Astro City off track at one point is Kurt Busiek got, I think it was mercury poisoning.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And it was impacting his ability to really kind of sit, focus, and think through and build up this kind of narrative.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. Well, I'm hoping we get more. I hope him and Brett, you know, both have their health and wits about them.
Well, yeah, I think it was the mercury stuff was like decades ago at this point, I think.
Yeah. And for me, honestly, this is just me thinking, maybe I hope they still have the passion to do this too. And I'm not saying that they don't lack passion, but sometimes, you know, you change as you age and things like that. But if they changed as they aged, maybe they could just change the stories that they're telling just a tiny bit, the characters. I'd still read it. It's probably still be good.
Well, I mean, they've moved on over the years, as has the Astro City universe.
Exactly. This feels like, when I was reading it, felt like something out of the 50s or 60s, even though it doesn't feel old. Who knows? Maybe when they come back to the property, it'll read like it's taking place in today, in the 2020s, or with kids, with the same characters. You know, maybe the world just feels a little bit older.
Well, I mean, there's definitely an aspect of the Astro City universe that is steeped in both the 30s and 40s era,
yeah,
when he's riffing on the DC early characters, certainly the 60s when he's riffing on the foundational Marvel characters. Again, this and the Fantastic Four is so steeped in that era from its origins and stuff like that. Yet he also built in a bit of the whole pulp hero with the science adventuring aspect and stuff, making the grandfather and stuff as much a Doc Savage as anything else.
Yeah, yeah. This is just
ton of stuff.
Ton of stuff. Terrific stories. I'm happy we're reading them right now.
Yeah. And I'm really enjoying the shifting viewpoints and stuff like that, because just in these four issues, we got an alien scout for an alien invasion, two heroes on a date, a man brand new to Astro City and wondering if he's regretting that decision, and then a third-generation young hero who longs for aspects of a normal life.
Going on an adventure out in the world. Who knows where? Just so much has happened.
And we're seeing this world from so many different vantage points.
Yeah. All over the place. You don't feel like you're just stuck in New York, or you're just stuck in wherever.
Or just stuck in the head of a Superman or a Spider-Man or a Nightwing or an Iron Man, and only seeing the world through a selected vantage point.
No, you're seeing it from every hero and even non-heroes, just ordinary citizens, which is really cool.
Well, every once in a while, some of the bad guys, too. We've seen an issue or two like that in the first go-round.
That's true.
So, ton of fun. Ton of fun.
Yeah, good stuff. I'm happy we read it.
Yeah, these things are all available in the Metro books. So far, we're just pulling out of the first Metro book. Those things are $30-$35 a piece, and they cover 18-19 issues, so I definitely think they're a good bang for the buck.
Oh, they are. And how many of them are there three of them out right now?
There's three of them out. There's, I think
there's going to be two more.
I think there's going to be three more, because they've got enough to fill up a sixth. I think they've announced a fourth and a fifth, if you look on like Amazon, where you would tend to see the stuff listed further out.
I just pulled it up. It's October 3rd of 23 will be book four.
Yeah.
So, yeah book five, who knows, after that.
So hopefully not too long, and hopefully we get some more new material.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, so I'm happy.
Same here. Anything else?
No, that does it for me.
Cool. Recording clips for the preview spotlight episodes is easy, and we've got an open submission policy for these episodes. Please send in clips to support the comics you love as often as you can. If you'd like to get email reminders for the preview spotlight episodes, you can join the emailing list on the main page of the comicbookpage.com website. The deadline is typically the second Saturday of the month at 9 a.m. Check the main page of the website for more information and the exact deadline for the next preview spotlight. Now, preview spotlight 193 for the December solicitations, we're going back to the regular format. Those are going to be due 9 a.m. December 9th, the second Saturday of December. And again, regular naming convention, pick something out of the current catalogs, etc. For that one, if there's something from October, November you just feel people have to know about, yeah, we could probably squeeze those in too. Just be sure to tell people that it's from one of the previous months.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.